We're going to be talking today because we have Jim D coming in at 106 and 7/8 to do movies with me.
And now, here's Bill Benica.
We call it Reel to Reel. That's what it's called. That's going to happen today. And then the weather's pretty nice out, unless you're in Florida, and you've got the hurricanes coming, and there's Sandy. Sandy's coming. And they say it's not going to be good. It's bad news. These hurricanes are bad news, I don't know anything about it. All right. Well, here's a story on the news just now that I'm sitting here staring at it and going, really? I didn't hear where this was, though. I have to apologize for that. This group of men has formed a cannibal club. Luckily, they were arrested before anything happened. Their intention was to kidnap, cook, and eat women. Shocking, but I'm sure it's something God intended for.
Ever smell coffee beans roasting?
You probably will
when you start buying your bags of coffee at Slow Roasted Coffee's warehouse in Los Osos. Slow Roasted Coffee is expanding their own in-house store, which will feature, you guessed it, coffee and accessories. They're open weekdays from 6 a.m. to 5 p.m., and there's always a few free coffees for you to sample. Catch this. You'll save money with the new Slow Roasted Coffee Coin Club. Here's how it works. After each coffee purchase, they'll stamp your coin, and your 10th pound will be free. Of course, your local grocery stores still carry Slow Roasted Coffee, but now you can shop directly at their warehouse. That's right. Walk in the door, and you might smell the beans a-roastin'. You'll find Slow Roasted Coffee in Los Osos at 1172 Los Olivos Avenue near Fairchild. Now in their third decade, Slow Roasted Coffee is truly a Central Coast tradition that tastes great.
How does a little shoe store like Mike's and the Slow Promenade seem so big? They start by taking assortment to a new level. Not just any assortment, but the brands people really want and the styles people really love. Mike, Annie, Shushun, and their entire crew at Mike's really know their stuff, and they're happy to make it work for you. The right people, the right place, all the time. You'll like Mike's and find what you're looking for in men's and women's shoes. Every time you hear this ad, you're just one pair away from the perfect number of shoes. Mike's Shoes at Southside Promenade.
Mike's Shoes at the Southside Promenade. Go see Mike's and the gang, and they're so nice there. The people are so nice and patient, and I don't know how they do it. Anyway, but they're really swell, and they got the great shoes. All right, let's talk about what's going on here. It's our flashback, our highlights, our thingies, and our birthdays today, according to the Tribune. Highlight in history on October 25th, 1962, in a dramatic confrontation before the U.N. Security Council, U.S. Ambassador Adlai Stevenson demanded that Soviet Ambassador Valerian Zorin confirm or deny the existence of Soviet-built missile bases in Cuba. When Zorin declined to respond, Stevenson said he was prepared to wait until hell freezes over for an answer. Stevenson then presented photographic evidence of the bases to the council. On this date in 1854, the Charge of Light Brigade took place during the Crimean War as an English brigade of more than 600 men charging the Russian army suffered heavy losses. 1945, Taiwan became independent from Japan and colonial rule. 1957, mob boss Albert Anastasia of Murder Incorporated Notoriety was shot to death by masked gunmen at a barbershop inside the Park Sheraton Hotel in New York. 1962, an American author, John Steinbeck, was named winner of the Nobel Peace Prize in literature. In 1971, the U.N. General Assembly voted to admit China and expel Taiwan. Probably, you know, timely, I suppose. All right, Adlai Stevenson had this to say: you can tell the size of a man by the size of the thing that makes him mad. Yeah. Our birthdays, Basketball Hall of Famer Bobby Knight is 72, author Ann Tyler is 71, rock singer John Anderson from Yes, a local now guy, he's 68, political strategist James Carville is 68, and pop singer Katy Perry is 28. We want to say happy birthday to them, most especially to you if it's yours today. Happy birthday.
Happy birthday to you.
California is number one at a lot of things. Surfing, wine. We're the state with the most millionaires, the most nonconformists, the most millionaire nonconformists. That's why Farmers, the number one insurance group in California, is proud to have been born right here. Our 4,200 agents statewide have the experience to help you tailor a plan for the unexpected.
You can't go wrong with a guy named Wright, so give Farmers agent Mike Wright a call at 541-3942.
Number one ranking based on market share of property and casualty insurers in California.
Adventure.
News you could use from CalcosNews.com, with polls showing support slipping for Governor Jerry Brown's tax measure, Prop 30. The state's chief executive yesterday raised the threat of a $6 billion cut to California education in the event that voters reject the temporary tax increase. There's no more money sitting around, Brown said. The nonpartisan Public Policy Institute of California this week had support for the measure at 48% compared to 44% opposition, virtual tie, I guess. It was the, because they got the percentage points on it. It was the first time any poll showed a backing for the increase to climb below 50%. An early agreement between Brown and lawmakers would keep school spending at its current level only if Prop 30 passes. Otherwise, built-in budget cuts would trigger costing kindergarten through 12 education more than $5.5 million and public colleges and universities another $500 million. Brown called the trigger on or off depend entirely on voters' decisions on this tax measure. The proposal would levy a 7-year tax increase for couples earning $500,000 or more and a 0.25% hike in the state's sales tax for a 4-year period. According to the governor, that would amount to one penny on the purchase of a $4 sandwich or whatever else you want to spend for it. You don't have to buy a sandwich. It could be $4 something else. You know, penny. Okay. We understand. We know the math. We got it. Okay. So let's now go to what's happening here locally. San Luis Obispo County Treasurer Tax Collector Frank Freitas announced yesterday that he's done with less than 2 years into his 4-year term. 2 months ago, Slo County Auditor Controller Gene Serbach announced that he would retire on December 29th, also with 2 years left in his 4-year term. Both men signed statements when they ran for office that they would serve out their terms because of the timing. The current Board of Supervisors will appoint their successors. Board of Supervisors appointed Jim Erb as Sabach's successor. Freitas was first elected treasurer tax collector in 1978 and reelected in 1982, 1986, 1990, 94, 98, 2002, 2006, 2010. He did not explain his sudden departure. I mentioned briefly yesterday, and unfortunately it's affected us here on the Central Coast, I mentioned briefly there had been a credit card breach at Barnes & Noble all over the place. Well, guess what? Hackers have stolen credit card information from customers of not only the 63 Barnes & Noble stores across the country, including San Luis Obispo store. On September 14th, Barnes & Noble discovered that the customer information had been stolen but kept the matter quiet at the Justice Department's request made so the FBI can investigate. This is really weird. So the more information was stolen while the FBI was investigating. Hey, who knows? Company is asking customers at any of the 63 Barnes & Nobles where information was stolen to change their PIN and scan their accounts for unauthorized transactions. Most of the hacking occurred in September. Currently, cashiers are swiping customer cards on readers connected to cash registers. Yep. We have one more story. Okay, yeah. This story first appeared in NewsHawk, an online news source in Santa Barbara County, and it was by Gina Potthoff, NewsHawk staff writer. Congressional candidate Malnato raised thousands of dollars for a state reelection bid during a party that his family's business later falsely claimed as a business expense on his tax returns, according to records. Have we heard this story already? Tax infractions stemming from a 2007 event, the latest in a months-long sparring over tax controversies involving the two contenders for California's 24th Congressional District. John Malnato, a Republican, faces longtime incumbent Representative Lois Capps of Santa Barbara in the highly contested November 6th race. Capps has been accused of failing to report rental income from a staffer living in her residence, and Maldonado family farming business is still in tax dispute with the Internal Revenue Service over millions of dollars in deductions. IRS records also show the Maldonado's family company, Agrojal Farming Enterprises, tried to write off the $3,686 catering fee of a party held December 5th in 2007. The IRS denied that write-off because the party, which was hosted at the Shell Beach residence of Maldonado's father, Frank, may have been a political fundraiser that didn't qualify as a business expense. According to California campaign finances records, Maldonado raised up to $35,000 at that 2007 party. It goes on, it goes on, it goes on. Anyway, that's what's happened at 12:16. You're up to the minute with CalcosNews.com.
CalcosNews.com on KYNS, your news station.
Up to the minuet. Okay, wait. Oh, wait. I got a thing here. I got our minute thing here. Did I mention this is Bill Benica, and this is 1340 KYS, and this is San Luis Obispo, California. Did I mention that? Oh, I was just checking. Okay. If I didn't, I just did. That you know what hit the national news was the shark attack that occurred the other day. And what's interesting to me is, and they have a picture of the guy's board and all this, with the big teeth marks. And here's a... I have a friend who's a surfer. I have a good friend who's a surfer, and I've never asked them this, but I'm going to ask them. I was thinking about this today, because they say that because of the shape of the surfboard, this was kind of a squat little surfboard looking thing, and that your arms and legs are hanging off it, that you know the they mistake you for prey. So I was wondering if you put a small waterproof strobe light on the bottom of a surfboard. What would happen? Would it keep the sharks away, or would it attract them, or what would it do to it? Because they know that a seal normally doesn't have a strobe light on. They may not know it consciously like that, you know, saying, well, a seal normally doesn't have a strobe light on, those words, because they don't even speak English, but you know what I'm saying? That was just a thought I had. I was trying to help people out here. All right. I can find out. Okay, that was that thought I had. Okay, what else you got, Benica? What else you got here? Here we just got done with the iPad thing, and then they had another story today in the news, which I didn't quite understand, so I think maybe it was a review of all things iPad-ish and iPad Max or iPad Mini or whatever it's called. Anyway, so I'm just thought I'd tell you that you might see new things popping up that don't make any sense. All right, I have this because this is our especially our Halloween minute here. I call this the Halloween minute because it relates to all things Halloween.
A howl of a Halloween for everyone. This is Soundbites, and I'm Jan Ziff. What kid doesn't love Halloween? What grown-up doesn't love Halloween? You know you love Halloween. So what are you going to be this year? Forget about the usual suspects, the run-of-the-mill goblins, Romneys, Obamas, and Honey Boo Boos, who'll be showing up on your doorstep soon. Be different this year. Find plenty of costume ideas at www.costume-works.com. Costume Works doesn't sell costumes, it shows you how to make them at home. Hundreds of good ideas contributed by families like yours. Costumes for you, your kids, your baby, and even your pets. Believe me, there's nothing scarier than a dog dressed up as Darth Vader. The ideas are organized by category and it's easy to browse. So get busy. Halloween's coming and it'll be your night to howl with costume-works.com. With Soundbites, I'm Jan Ziff for CBS News.
Thank you, kid. All right, so, and we're going to, let me make sure before I say we're doing this. Before I commit, let me make sure that we're going to do what I think we're going to do on Halloween. But I think we're going to do, Ivan's show. We're going to stick it in the second hour because he's got all kinds of Halloween music and stuff going on. So I thought, okay, that'd work. That would work. All right. Here was an item about getting to know Windows 8, and you know,
unleash the power of argument.
When you go to on to Google, you know, there's a box that pops up all the time saying, "You want to learn about Windows 8?" No, I don't really. You know, I keep saying, "Ask me later," but they don't have a box that says, "Leave me alone." So I don't know, but I don't care. But we'll find out now about it.
That's awesome.
I don't like this design.
Okay. Simple enough.
Microsoft's new Windows 8 operating system is the most radical change to the look of its software since the late 1980s. This is David Gallagher for the New York Times. Okay. Windows 8, which goes on sale Friday, works best with a touchscreen computer and presents your email, the weather, photos, music, and favorite apps in a rainbow of large block icons.
Web page. Okay, it's really confusing.
We invited 5 people to come in and try out Windows 8.
Some of it feels intuitive once you've already done it, but it doesn't feel automatically intuitive.
The design is aimed in part at making Microsoft more competitive in the growing tablet market.
Oh my gosh, that's so cool.
But industry analysts say many consumers and businesses won't be inclined to adopt Windows 8 immediately.
We believe that 90% of medium to large business actually won't deploy Windows 8 to all their users. And that's not a bad thing necessarily, because they're really still working on Windows 7. They're working on trying to get off of XP. And that's really important. Businesses will look at Windows 8 for certain types of users, probably those that need tablets and such.
The traditional Windows Start button is gone.
It should be easier to identify. I shouldn't have to think about it.
But there is a key that gets you back to the Start screen.
Go back. Now I don't know how to go back.
To write a new email, you have to click on this plus symbol in the upper right corner.
Look in your hand, it's a button. It's a button. The on-screen button.
And printing something?
It's me.
To run Microsoft Office and other programs not optimized for Windows 8, users need to switch to the more traditional-looking desktop mode. Some people actually thought this feature was a good way to help people transition from older versions of Windows.
I felt like the biggest amateur computer user.
Can I say this? That's enough of that. Let me just say this. First off, you have to have a touchscreen computer to make this thing work, and a lot of people don't. And so if you have Windows XP and it's working for you, leave it alone. That's what I see. You know, when they were doing this, you might think that they were showing the computer screen, and you're thinking, Bill, was that showing the computer screen? No, they weren't. They were showing these people being dumbfounded by the fact that they didn't know what they were doing when they first saw it. But it was different. You know, this is this new thing where you can enlarge stuff by making your fingers go whee and shrink stuff and flip the pages and do all that kind of stuff. It's kind of different. No question about it. Not what we're used to. Not what we're used to at all. Okay. Now, let's. I think here's the thing we need to talk about right here. This is the amazing Sandoval, who joined Babe Ruth, Reggie Jackson, Albert Pujols as the only players to hit 3 home runs in a World Series game, and that was Pablo Sandoval last night for the Giants. He basically was the whole game, is what he was. But anyway, he was really something, and that's pretty cool. So anyway, we congratulate him, the Dodgers. Freudian slip. The Giants kick butt. So then the next game's 4:30 today, back in San Francisco. So there you go. On it goes, on and on. Now here's something that happened I thought was kind of strange. They put them on opposite sides of the last page of the paper, which I thought was interesting. The next to last page of paper. So on this side was an editorial by the Tribune. The state parks need an even policy. Waiving fees for Summit Hearst Castle opens state to charge the favoritism. Okay, so they're talking about the fact that $322,000 worth of fees that weren't collected. $611,000 was waived. Now here's what's interesting. So now the guy Nick Franco, who's the superintendent of San Luis Obispo Coastal District for California State Parks, he's the one that gets the monkey with the numbers. But here's his rationalization. He would have been better just to not say anything. You know what I'm saying? Hide under your desk. He said from 2002 to June 12th, 2012. California State Parks waived $5,666,000 in event fees for nonprofit events that met the department's community involvement goals. In the same period, State Parks collected more than $1.7 million in fees and donations from events held at Hearst Castle. That means the castle brought in more than $114 million, which is twice the amount of the fees waived. I'd say that's a pretty good return on investment. No. This whole other, if you combine those two numbers, that's what your return on investment should have been. But okay, so you have this issue of nonprofits and can you waive fees for nonprofits and who should do it and how often do you do it and do you do it for every nonprofit that wants to have an event? Do you do it for some nonprofits that want to have an event? Is there a politician like in Jack O'Connell's case connected to the event? This is kind of what's the old slippery slope thing, in my opinion. That's what I think. That's what I think. All right. Now, this is amusing to me. Pismo race defined by the use of Price Canyon. The city council candidates expressed varying views on land's potential annexation development. So this is this whole thing about, all this big, huge development in Price Canyon they wanted to do. Everybody's just already tossed aside this other development. They voted out past, Robles de Poo-Poo. Anyway, they're not even thinking about that one anymore. So now they're thinking about this huge thing that's down the canyon. I have to say something. I've always gotten a kick out of the fact that as soon as somebody moves here, and myself included, I move here and I go, you know, this is really a great place. It's less of a great place because I moved here, you know, to the other people that were already here. I've made it less of a wonderful place. And so what's interesting is as we go along, you know, people keep piling in here, and they go, this is a wonderful place. And the people that lived here all their lives are going, no, it's not as good as it used to be. You know, we have to keep that in mind, those of us that are interlopers on the Central Coast and not natural and native to the area. The other thing that's interesting, and I say this again, the people that usually are, this is my impression, the people that tend to be the most vocal about whether or not more housing should be built or less housing, or like, tend to be people that have moved to this area in, I would say, the last 20 years. Not the people that have lived here their whole lives. The people who have lived here their whole lives generally kind of shrug their shoulders and go, well, it was going to happen sooner or later. That's really the impression I get from them. But anyway, so we'll see what happens with Price Canyon. Some, you know, you have to imagine that somewhere along the line, there's going to be a council that's going to favor doing something with it, and, you know, it'll happen. That's my guess. Candidates target female voters who are still unsure. You know why they're unsure, don't you? Okay, I'd be unsure too. And then we had the veterans pass through today, and it was after, before I ever got on the air, so I didn't have a chance to tell you about it. But this was the ride to recovery, and this is for wounded vets that were taking a bike ride down to from. Let me make sure I get this right. They went from. They're going to go down to Santa Monica. So they rode from San Simeon. That's where it started, okay. And then they're going to go all the way down to Santa Monica. So they're going through Ventura and all that. Okay, so that's going on. And in case you saw a bunch of people on bicycles, that's what it is. You know this guy that strangled a woman over the cell phone thing? Okay, what's this guy's name? How do you say his name? Edmund Nungery. He was in an incident with people being hurt once before with having a cell phone. He got angry at a niece who was 15 years old, and so he kind of, how do you want to say it, attacked her and tried to get the phone away from her anyway, because she was calling the cops. She was freaking out about the guy, so he was calling the cops, so it was really kind of weird. In a more recent case, then Gary allegedly told police he gave his phone to Crowley so she could help him set up his voicemail, but he said she wouldn't return the phone, making him mad. So this guy's not well, man. As you can imagine, this guy's probably not well. Okay, don't forget, we have Jim D coming in today at 106 and 7/8, and he'll be here, and we're gonna share movie stuff because there's some interesting things going on out there in the world. And before we do that, we should do this.
Hi, this is Bill Sinha, your friendly neighborhood insurance guy. Just wanted to remind you that the annual enrollment period is upon us again, and I want you to know that my office is here to serve and help you. Call me at 489-HELP. Sinha's Insurance is a local full-service insurance agency where we treat you like family. Yeah, we're well known for helping others. You know, I'm a senior citizen myself, and I kind of know how you feel. Sometimes these choices can be a bit complicated. Remember, I've been in business well over 20 years, and I want to help with your Medicare and prescription drug choices. Let us help choose the best plan for you. But again, it's your choice. We just want to help you avoid some pitfalls. Just call Bill Sinha's Insurance at 489-HELP or 489-4357.
Have you heard what's new for Medicare in 2013? There's more options for Medigap, prescription drugs, and Advantage plans. Give Bill a call at 489-HELP for seminar dates and more information. That's 489-HELP.
Get away to the beach this fall with the Sea Venture Beachfront Resorts Fall Escape Package. Those of you familiar with Pismo Beach know that the months of September and October bring the best weather the Central Coast has to offer. And along with the great weather, the Sea Venture is offering a low-price fall escape package. For this romantic getaway, you'll be staying overnight in a room with a private balcony hot tub, fireplace, and feather bed. Your package also includes a complimentary bottle of champagne or wine delivered to your room. This package is valid Sunday through Thursday, and it's just $159 per night. You can also add a $50 dinner voucher for the Sea Venture Restaurant for just an additional $40. The Sea Venture Restaurant sits above the resort with fabulous ocean views and tasty coastal cuisine. Happy hour is nightly, 4 to 6, and you might see whales and dolphins cavorting offshore while you enjoy the sunset. Live music is featured Wednesday night from 6 to 9, and Sundays on the deck from 2 to 5 in the afternoon. So if your summer has come and gone and you still need to get away and relax, call and reserve the Sea Venture Fall Escape Package. The Sea Venture Beachfront Resort, the best on the beach in Pismo Beach.
Idlers, we are a family-owned company, and we love where we live.
We are your neighbors.
We are How'd You Sleep Last Night?
Idlers Sleep Source has the perfect beds for a perfect night's sleep.
Ready for perfect?
Try Sealy, Simmons Beauty Rest, Tempur-Pedic.
We have them all and more.
At every price.
Free delivery, free setup, free haul away, every day.
Paso,
San Luis Obispo,
Idlers.net.
Idlers Sleep Source, best prices guaranteed.
Country Oaks Care Center, caring for the loved ones that you care about. Country Oaks,
owned and operated by John and Sharon Henning. They're friends of mine, really nice friends, and that niceness shows at their 57-bed skilled nursing facility at 830 East Chapel in Santa Maria. Country Oaks specializes in short-term rehabilitation and long-term care. Country Oaks accepts Medicare, Medi-Cal, HMOs, and private insurance, and will do the paperwork for you. They offer physical, occupational, speech, enteral, and IV therapies, including a fully equipped therapy room. At Country Oaks Care Center, your loved ones will find a warm and caring staff and a home-like atmosphere. All activities are geared to individual needs and desires, as well as nutritious meals and that extra ounce of caring and a cup of slow-roasted coffee. From Rotary to their annual float participation in the Santa Maria Elks Rodeo Parade, the Hennings are involved in their community. At 830 East Chapel in Santa Maria, Country Oaks Care Center, caring for the loved ones that you care about.
When I first saw her, it was love at first sight. Man, was she gorgeous. I thought I'd found everything I ever dreamed of. But pretty quickly I realized that something was missing. Something just wasn't there. My beautiful, incredible, high-definition television would never be all that I hoped for without Charter HDTV service.
Give your high-def television everything it needs with Charter HDTV. You'll get the most amazing picture available, up to 5 times sharper than regular TV, all in theater-quality widescreen format. Call today to get Charter's superior HD programming, including local channels broadcast in HD. Only Charter makes it this easy to experience all that your HDTV is capable of, with no expensive equipment to buy.
Just one simple hookup, and my HDTV was all that I imagined. It may sound crazy, but I think Charter might be the one.
Complete your HDTV with HD service from Charter. Call 1-888-GET-CHARTER today.
And get Charter and try Charter because it's smarter than as you are right there. Hi, you're Bill Becca, and currently it's a 12:30, we'll call it 12:38, as it's just about to click over. And here they had a thing in the paper, which I don't want to get into a whole lot of, but it's batters walk up and rock out. So here's they actually play. I wasn't listening hard enough, I suppose, or the fact that I can't hear. But anyway, they as the batters walk up to the is it to the plate or to the deck on deck circle? Anyway, somewhere where they walk to. Let me see. They play music for these guys, and they have all the different. They have you know how many players? They have 18 different players. And what music they play. I don't know any of these. I don't know. I don't know a single one. Anyway, but there you are. I don't know any of these singers. I don't know any of these songs. I don't know anything. I know who Taylor Swift and Nicki Minaj are, and they're going to be performing at the American Music Awards. And Minaj is the night leading nominee along with Rihanna for 4 bids each. Then you may have heard that Tom Cruise is suing a magazine for $50 million because they showed a picture of his daughter and they said, you know, she was wasn't an accurate caption, but she said, you know, that he had abandoned her and that she was crying at the time. And so then he said, he asked for an apology, and then instead of apologizing, they went to another magazine they own and did the same thing again. So we'll see where it goes. We'll see what happens. Bobby Brown was arrested for another DUI. You know, and then, but that's part and parcel to Snooki wants a normal life for her son. He can't have a normal life. He look at the mother he has. How's he gonna have a normal life? Just was wondering. Yeah, I just wondering how you gonna do that. Okay. Oh, by the way, slow prices fall a quarter from peak. Analysts say the state could see $4 a gallon by Thanksgiving. The surge subsides. So the surging subsides. But here's the deal. I did go online today and look it up. The cheapest gas you can buy is in Venezuela. It's a quarter a gallon. Now, you say to yourself, but you have to live in Venezuela. Who wants to do that? I don't disagree with that one iota. I'm right with you on that program. I don't want to live there either for 25 cents a gallon gas. Just somewhere, you know, there should be some kind of a something, some deal that, you know, some kind of something. I don't know what it is. It's bothering me. Kuwait was about, I think, 84 cents. It was 84 cents a gallon in Kuwait. I mention that because if they can have 84 cent a gallon gas, we should be able to have 84 cent a gallon gas from them, you know, because that's, you know, it's Kuwait. You remember Kuwait? Yeah, okay. I think that perhaps we'd get involved in it. Okay, anyway. So let's see what else is going on. Here they have a headline today and then an article that says, Charter Schools Oversight Criticized. You know, I was reading this thing. I said to my, I'm not even sure. If someone said to you, Bill Benica, define a charter school. What is a charter school? I don't know that I could do it. Okay? I have this vague concept of what a charter school is, you know. But it's vague. It's different than regular school. But it's still school. So it's vague. That's it right there. I'm going to confess to you. And then in Texas, they raised the speed limit up to 85 miles an hour. On Highway 130, it's a toll road that opened Wednesday, and it's the highest speed limit. Drivers can use the road to travel between Seguin, and Austin. And so here's a radar gun showing this guy going 88. See, it doesn't matter what you make the top speed at. Somebody's going to go 3 miles an hour over that. They just are. They can't help themselves. They have to. It's in the DNA and whatnot. Speaking of DNA, here's an experiment they pulled, and they said it happens. Actually, the British government did it before, but anyway, we did it. Three parents, one embryo. So it's a little bit weird, but what they did was they said like 1% of this embryo was a third person, and the reason they did it was because they were trying to control exactly what we talked about the other day, and we talked about with Dr. Fred. They were trying to control recessive gene that could be passed along and cause you problems later on down the road. So, of course, they get in this whole thing, and this is, they got the slippery slope, too, about designer babies and all that. I don't know. So they're saying there's already questions about what would happen with the child when they got to be older and with the child's descendants. Now, you get rid of a terrible disease out of a person's family lineage. You know, you get rid of some terrible disease. I think God would want us to do that. I don't know. I don't see anything. It seems to be sort of ridiculous if you know you can get rid of it to not get rid of it. We have a better idea. You're just going to go ahead and develop this disease. You're going to suffer. It's going to be terrible for you, you know, and everybody around you is going to suffer because you have it. But that's life. Yeah. But if they could change that, why wouldn't you change it? If you could change it in you, would you change it in you? They don't have to do designer babies. They never have to offer people designer babies. Forget that. Never has to happen. What will happen, I don't know. Okay, here was this thing that Dr. Fred Vernacki talked about when he was in from Samuels Diagnostic. Breast tissue disclosure laws are controversial. Advocates say dense tissues can mask cancer cells. Laws come in California where they have to inform you that if you have dense breasts, and I guess the radiologist knows if you do, then you will be told that, you know, this X-ray may not, or this mammogram may not be sufficient to find a tumor in the event that you have one, so you're going to have to decide what else you should do. The doctors are saying what's going to happen with this is that people are going to be spending fortunes on stuff that they didn't know need to spend fortunes on, and it's probably more alarming to them than it wouldn't otherwise be to just have the doctor explain it. It's like, okay, darn. What's going on with that? Other people in the news today. San Mateo County's taking the big step of no plastic baggies. They're going with that. Somebody wrote a letter the other day that was it was interesting. They said, look at all the stuff that's wrapped in plastic that you buy. You know, I mean, you're not getting rid of a lot of plastic, really, when you consider how much plastic that is. But they don't blow, a lot of that stuff doesn't blow around quite the same way, I think, is what they're trying to say. That's what I'm thinking. All right. You know, here's one of these things, you know. So this is when people say, if it's your time to go, it's your time to go. I never have believed in that, but people say that. So here it is. Here it is right here. Authorities say a Southern California woman was killed on a highway near Bakersfield after a tire flew off another vehicle and struck the windshield. She was headed south on Highway 99 Tuesday night when a trailer being hauled by a pickup going the opposite direction lost a wheel. The wheel struck the woman's windshield, and she was killed from the impact. You don't expect this to happen here. We're just driving down the road, you know. You don't expect it. It's not the thing you think is going to happen. I'm pretty sure. Okay. Now, there's no way to understand this. You know, this doesn't seem like it's possible, but apparently it is. A homeowner who police say has survived being shot in the jaw during a burglary has received startling news. The burglary suspect sued him for returning fire. Marin Independent Journal reported Wednesday that Samuel Curtifelli filed the suit claiming 90-year-old Jay Leon, this guy's 90 years old, by the way, that returned the fire, that he was robbing. Jay Leon negligently shot him. Curtifelli is charged with two counts of attempted murder after Leon was shot in the face on January 3rd. Police say Curtifelli was wounded when Leon returned fire. So there you go. San Bernardino guy that's 86 years old is the first to die from West Nile virus in San Bernardino County. So, boy, we got stuff out there, I'll tell you. You can run, but you can't hide, I guess. But it's, I mean, we got stuff. We got stuff and stuff. We got stuff and stuck. All right, let me see what we're doing with the story here I was going to share with you. It's about Syria. But I've had problems with this earlier today, so I'm having problems with it now. So I don't think we're going to hear about Syria. I can try. One more idea. Okay. Okay, Bill, say goodnight. Okay, goodnight. Video cannot be downloaded, said. Okay, well, not surprised at that. Now, because I have Jim D coming in here the next hour, what I'm going to do is I'm going to check our headlines and see if there's anything that's happened, like people setting themselves on fire and blaming somebody else and whatnot. You would think there would have been a follow-up story to that thing to say, this is why the woman did this. You know, she's got mental problems or she, who knows, that's something. You would think something. There's CNN has an exclusive Assange on living in solitary confinement. It's not really in solitary confinement, but I guess that, you know, it's probably not pleasant, but it's not solitary confinement, but okay. All right, so let's see what else is going on. Hurricane Sandy approaches the Bahamas, so I mentioned Florida, but it's Bahamas and Florida. A lot of wind, a lot of big tide surge. This was a New York cop that was accused of that cannibalism plot. Wow. American Airlines to hire 2,500 pilots. That's a lot of pilots. Do they have planes for all of them, or are they just going to hire them? No. Some are going to fly the little thing you put the quarter in out front of the terminal. That's a lot of pilots. Let's see what it says about that. It says the iconic but troubled American Airlines says it intends to hire 2,500 pilots over the next 5 years. Okay, 5 years. That helps. That makes it a little bit more palatable. The airline's parent, AMR, filed for bankruptcy protection in November and has been locked in a contentious battle with its pilots' union over its efforts to cut labor costs. And letter employees on Wednesday, CEO Tom Horton said American Airlines will hire new pilots to staff new international and domestic routes. Company spokesman Bruce Hicks said about 1,500 of the new hires would replace retiring pilots or jobs that open up due to attrition. America has about 7,500 active pilots today. Of course, they're going to get the new planes from Boeing. These big, huge planes from Boeing are coming. And Boeing's trying to crank them out as fast as they can because it helps their bottom line, of course. So that's what's going on there. All right. I don't know what this is. Jeannie Moos, and I've read this headline now about 10 times today, different places on this website. It's about a naked man singing to a ham. So I thought we should find out, don't you think? Come on, tell me the truth. Don't you think we should find out? Okay, we may have a commercial first, but that's okay. We got to find out why the guy's singing naked to a ham. There can't really be an explanation for that, can there?
You'd have to be a pig not to appreciate a naked man singing the praises of a ham sandwich.
Oh, Richmond ham has nature intended.
If it sounds familiar, that's because this British ham commercial is a takeoff of that old Sammy Davis, now Hammy Davis Jr. classic he sang on Playboy After Dark.
I gotta be me. Oh, Richmond ham, a mouthful of splendid.
But one man's mouthful of splendid is another man's mouthful of offensive. And the ad ended up before Britain's ASA. The Advertising Standards Authority said it received 371 complaints, mostly from people who apparently felt they had to avert their eyes. And while one advertising blog named it Turkey of the Week, the spot had lots of fans, including a gay blogger who couldn't get enough of the scruffy hottie.
Every slice meatily.
The advertiser self-censored the spot, reducing cheeky shots like this.
100% natural ingredients.
It's a meal. your legs.
And natural ingredients, it's true, yes.
So how did the advertising authority assess the nudity complaint? Not upheld. The authority called it a lighthearted reference to the product being as nature intended. It was not sexual in tone.
It's true, yes, it's Richmond for me.
New Richmond ham. Britain's only ham made with 100% natural ingredients.
Uh-oh. Nudity didn't get the ad banned. Britain's only ham did. The ham is actually made in Ireland. We therefore concluded the claim was misleading. But rather than fix the ad, the manufacturer is dropping it, saying the advertisement has run its course, leaving fans of the scruffy hottie bummed. And from now on, beware of nude ham. It's more discreet to add dressing. Genie Mo, CNN. New York.
Oh, hell. Okay. That's what I was about. Okay, now I finally know. So I find out. The ham. Okay. He looks a little bit like Brad Pitt, you know, who's doing the Chanel No. 5. Now, people, there's a lot of people making fun of that Chanel No. 5 ad that Brad Pitt's doing because it's a little bit out there. But here's the interesting thing, and I was talking to Nancy about it. I said, you know, for now, I mean, they can say whatever they want to, but, you know, think about when Christmas starts rolling around and how many women are going to remember this ad. It's now subliminally in their head. And men, too, you know, they're going to go out and buy their wife something for Christmas. I think it was probably a genius, to tell you the truth. All right. And other news, other things that are going on. I did want to share this with you if I can, if I have time, and I do if I can just find it. Just take me a sec, and then I want to because this is like. You know this Honey Boo Boo, this little girl? I don't care about Honey Boo Boo, to tell you the truth. I've known kids there a lot. Anyway, I don't care. But there's this person who I try not to mention in the news, but she's always in the news, and now she's in the news again, this time because Anderson Cooper decided to talk about it.
For the ridiculous, and tonight we are adding political pundits everywhere. This one's going to get me in trouble, I know. That's right. I hate to do it. I love me some election year punditry, and the truth is I work with some of the best, names like Gergen, Borger, Carville, Madeline, the Mount Rushmore of political insight. But not so fast, David Gergen. Hold on to your whiskey, James Carville. There's a new pundit in town. Well, maybe not in town technically, but at least in front of her computer somewhere. Her name is Lindsay Lohan, noted Lifetime movie star and all-around national treasure. Now, naturally, her tweets are extremely newsworthy, especially ones about the American political climate. So, David Gergen, while you were hanging out in Washington last night with your Wolf Blitzers, myself, and that magic wall, which, by the way, you might not realize this, doubles as a beer pong table in John King's garage on weekends, you were missing out on the real political analysis on Ms. Lohan's Twitter feed. OMG, it is happening, exclamation mark, exclamation mark, exclamation mark. Well, you get the point. The final debate, exclamation mark, exclamation mark. I'm so nervous, one exclamation mark. Ms. Lohan, she posted that last night. Now, coincidentally, I got that same email from James Carville, but I digress. A bit later, Ms. Lohan was back, this time in her capacity as a historian, tweeting, 1920s, 1950s, dot, 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 dot. It's all the same, comma. History repeats itself, dot, 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 dot. Only if you let it. Duly noted, Lindsay Lohan. Now, I should point out that Ms. Lohan has already said she's inclined to support Mitt Romney. She spoke to the E! Exclamation Point Network at a place where all important political endorsements get made these days, a launch party for a new ginseng beverage.
I just think unemployment's really important, so as of now, I think it's Mitt Romney. As of now.
But back to last night. You know that thing on Twitter where celebrities try to interact with other celebrities who then ignore them? I mean, we've all seen it. It's embarrassing, especially for me every time I get ignored by Jack A. Harry. Well, it seems that during the debate, Ms. Lohan was trying to get the attention of HBO's Bill Maher. I really want to know your honest-to-God thoughts, she wrote. Would you please direct message me? Now, I don't know if Bill Maher direct messaged Lindsay Lohan or not. Maybe he did. After all, he does a political talk show, and she's nothing if not very relevant. Ms. Lohan also attempted to interact with actress Sarah Silverman, comedian, and the Twitter account for Vanity Fair magazine. Apparently no luck there. Now, I know what you're thinking. Anderson, you strange little albino-like creature. Why should I care what Hollywood people think about the election? They're so out of touch. Not so, America. Not so at all. Lindsay Lohan is a woman of the people. She cares about pocketbook issues, literally. Just take a look at this totally relatable tweet from just a few weeks ago. Quote, Birkin, period. Mac computer, period. Chanel and a jet. Never quit fighting to live your dreams. God bless. A private jet, a Birkin handbag that costs, I don't know, thousands of dollars. God bless indeed. Not only that, she wrapped up her live tweeting of last night's debate with a bipartisan backslap. Nice work to both Barack Obama and Mitt Romney. ... I'm so relieved that it's over. Maybe more than both of you. ... Severe anxiety. God bless. XO. You see, a thoughtful, nuanced Lindsay Lohan, exactly what you want in a pundit or a ginseng beverage party attendee. So have a seat, political elite. Lindsay's got election night covered on The Ridiculous.
There you are. Okay. It's done now. It's all done now. All right. Other people that are in the news today, other things going. Let me see if I can get some local stuff here. While we still got a couple of minutes here, because Jim's here, and we're going to do our reel to reel here at right after the news. Well, this has been all over the place, and I haven't mentioned it, so I should. And that is Bill Moreham said a bonehead move inspires true integrity. A guy named Jack Smith's driving along the other day and heard Adam Montiel on KIQO in the morning. Say up and Adam, he was joking with his cohort about, you know, what would it be like if you had an obituary that was done like a radio commercial, you know, kind of cutesy. And so he read one, a real one, from that day, and it was this guy's father. He wasn't happy. So he was suspended. I think he's back to work today. He was suspended for a few days. And I'm sure that he, you know, he's a smart man, Adam Montiel. And I'm sure he realizes, you know, the bonehead maneuver that he did do. And so now what's happened is American General Media has not only apologized, but they've said they're going to support some causes that this man's interested in. So that's where we ended up with that thing. But, you know, people sometimes, they open mouth and insert foot, you know, and people that do radio do it too. There's a much greater danger for people that do radio every day to do this themselves, you know. There really is. So, I mean, how can you help it? You know, you're doing a lot of yakking, and you hope you don't get your foot in your mouth. But every now and then somebody goes, you get, I've never been inspired to do an obituary in any particular way. But, you know, that's neither here nor there. But anyway, I'm sure Adam Montiel is okay now. All right, let's see what else is going on. Oh, this is interesting. Paso Robles, the fire department, works with the schools, the high school students and stuff, and they help train them in life-saving techniques and stuff, which is a smart idea, really. You know, then everybody's already prepared to help each other out when they're right there. So that makes sense to me. I like that. So that was a neat idea they're doing. And they're also going to show them how to pee on a fire or whatever else they would do. All right, other things that were going on. This was a... here was a Napomo firefighter that went from, there's these journeys that people take, and he took 30, how many days did they take? 30-something days. 36 days. Because if you're a firefighter, you have 36 days off. Otherwise, there's no possible way you could do this, of course. So he was he went from the Golden Gate Bridge to the Brooklyn Bridge and raised money, I suppose. I'm not sure. It doesn't say raise money. Let me see if it says he raised money. Oh, let's see. Oh, yeah, wait, here it is. He rode 3,400 miles in order to raise money for his 22-year-old sister. There you go, who's going to go to college. So there he raised money. And so I've never been asked to sponsor somebody that's riding across the country, and I'm sure I couldn't afford it, so it's probably best. We're going to do CBS News, come back with Jim D.
Hey, kids, remember, lots of adults and kids, too, paid admission to enjoy the show. We must insist on absolute quiet.
Real to real, Bill Beck at Jim D. and the Palm Theater and you and me and everything else that's going on. Hi, Jimmy.
Hi, Bill. Great to be here.
Good to have you, man. Well, we've already been talking about something. We're going to play part of a trailer for you, and the reason being is because Jim said he saw the movie up in Toronto, and he was like, "Say what?" And then he said other friends that go, "Say what?" And what Roger Ebert say?
He loved it.
Okay,
he loved it.
Apparently it's tough to. Here's how they say it in the ticket. It says easy to admire and hard to like. Anyhow, let's. You don't have to see it in order for this trailer to work. Because I watched it earlier today. I said, okay, if I wasn't watching what's on the screen, it's irrelevant what's on the screen. I really mean that. It doesn't matter one way or the other if you see what's on the screen or not. You can get some feeling for what this movie's. Well, I kind of get what it's about. I can't even understand what it's about. But there we go.
Friday the 15th, 15th. We made sail with the morning tide. I have been quarantined to a storeroom away from the other passengers and crew. All I want to do now is return home.
My dear Sixsmith, I am in desperate need of your help. I got hooked on a journal written in 1849 by a dying lawyer during a voyage from a Pacific isle to San Francisco. Half the book is missing. It's completely killing me. A half-finished book is, after all, a half-finished love affair.
What are you reading?
Old letters.
Why do you keep reading them?
I don't know. Just trying to understand why we keep making the same mistakes over and over.
Our lives and our choices, each encounter.
Louisa Ray, Spyglass Magazine.
Right. Suggests a new potential direction.
All right, so here's the thing. It's over and over and over and over and over. And so that's the idea, is that this I said to Jim when I first said this when we start came in, I said, so is this movie, it sounds to me like it's about reincarnation, but it's not?
It could be. The film we're talking about is Cloud Atlas. Yeah. It opens tomorrow. It opens pretty big. It's a Warner Brothers release. I saw the trailer. I was pretty fascinated by it, mainly not so much the directors of The Matrix, the Wachowskis, but Tom Tykwer was also one of the directors. He is a German director. He did Run, Lola, Run and a handful of films. Not all great films, but he's an interesting director. So I thought, boy, if he's attached to this, it might be pretty great. And then the trailer that you just played, the audio from, I watched the trailer and I thought, wow. Are they going to pull this thing together? We're in the 18th century, and we're also in the far, far future. We have Tom Hanks, Halle Berry, Hugh Grant, Hugo Weaving, you know, big cast. So I went to see it in Toronto about a month and a half ago. Very mixed reactions to it. In fact, I told you the Roger Ebert review, he was very fascinated. The review in today's Ticket, they, you know, what is it, admire it, but hard to like. I'll go on the record. I thought it was pretty dreadful myself. It just didn't tie up the fact that Tom Hanks plays characters from the 18th century to the far, far future. There's six stories going on all at once. Now, apparently the book, I haven't read the book, but I mean, apparently these stories go in much more of a chronological order through time. The film isn't that. All the stories are going on at once. Wow. I mean, they'll show a scene or two from this story, which takes place in the present day with Halle Berry, to the one that takes place in, you know, a zillion years in the future. And, you know, and it's all going on at the same time. So I'm grasping at what is the connectedness of these stories. And, frankly, I didn't get it at all. And the one that's set in the future, it's sort of a science fiction film. I mean, visually, the whole film visually is pretty amazing, even though I had a little hard time with the makeup. Every time Tom Hanks showed up in a different goofy makeup, I just thought they should have had a better makeup artist. But really? That was my opinion. Well, it's, oh, there's Tom Hanks with buck teeth and red hair. You know, I just thought, okay, So, you know, look, I really wanted to like this movie, Bill. I thought it looked fascinating from the trailer, but boy, I should also warn your listeners, it runs about 3 hours. So it's about 3 hours long. And then, of course, the problem these days is three-hour movies do not have an intermission. Mm-hmm. I don't know why any of the Pirates of the Caribbean or all these ones that run about 2 hours and 20 minutes or longer, put an intermission in there at a dramatic moment where you kind of get up, stretch your legs, go to the restroom, buy some at the concession stand, and you're ready for the second half.
Right.
Intermissions are a thing of the past, and it's very unfortunate. I mean,
Especially a three-hour movie.
Well, I mean, for instance, I was upset with this review of Cloud Atlas today in the ticket because they had the gall to compare this movie to 2001, which nobody's going to be, you know, 2001 was made, what, 45 plus years ago. Yeah. We still talk about it as being an iconic science fiction movie. They're going to forget about this movie in about 6 months, I think. You know, it's just not that, to make that comparison is very tough, I think. However, you know, mixed reviews, mixed reaction to this one, but for me, it just didn't work, and it's 3 hours long.
And you know, and you look back at 2001. Of course, that was just mind-boggling, and when it came out of the new techniques they had used. And of course, the other things that are iconic are some of the lines that Hal used and things like that are still part of our lexicon today. You know, we still say them to each other and things like that. So that's very interesting. The Wachowski brothers. I have to say this. As much as I thought it was a little bit muddled as far as a plot, I enjoyed The Matrix, but I think I enjoyed The Matrix again more for the spectacle of The Matrix, you know, and this crazy stuff they were doing. But if you come right down to it, though, here's what's wrong with The Matrix and its brethren. It's about people punching each other in the head. You know, I mean, that's what it's about, people just whacking on each other. Now, here's an interesting thing. I was watching the trailer. The guy that played Agent Smith in The Matrix.
Is that Hugo Weaving?
Oh, is that his name?
It's the guy from Australia?
I don't know where he's from. I never know because they don't have access. He's talked really funny in The Matrix. Remember the guy that was the agent that he was always chasing and fighting?
Yeah,
and
Hugo Weaving.
Oh, that's Hugo Weaving. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. I don't know.
He was in Lord of the Rings. He's an Australian
actor.
Yeah,
I think I saw him in Lord of the Rings. I think my... I was pointing them out. As a matter of fact, I was pointing them out to one of the kids or something, saying, "Oh, did you see who that is?" And they go, "No." Okay. So anyway, Hugo Weaving. Okay. That's who he was. I saw him in this. So they must like him, the Wachowskis.
They do. And you know, in Cloud Atlas, he plays a number of different roles. One of them, a female nurse. And you're kind of sitting there, and see, to me, how this film didn't work is you're sitting there going, "Oh, that's Hugo Weaving dressed up as a female." And I'm thinking about that, and I'm supposed to be getting into this movie. So, you know, I mean, for some viewers, I'm sure it'd be kind of fun looking at these actors in different makeup and garb and different time, you know, different centuries and so on and so forth. But from that, you know, it's sort of a curiosity from that standpoint. But as far as having a movie with any emotional depth or anything that really ties together, I'd be curious of your listeners, if they go see this film, Cloud Atlas, how they will react to it. My feeling, it'll be a love-hate movie. Either they're going to, I love the book, I'm going to go see the movie two or three times because it's so much to take in that I got to see it two or three times or whatever. That's fine. For me, it was hard getting through just one time, but that's just me.
No, that's all right, and that happens with movies sometimes. You know, you're just I've watched movies before and just gone, I don't get this at all. Somehow I'm not tuned into this thing, but I still can't help but feel, even after you describe it, it has to do with reincarnation.
It could. It very well could. I mean, you could look at these Halle Berry through the centuries, and this is the same person being reincarnated. The film doesn't tell you that, or the film doesn't really...
Even strongly suggest it, necessarily.
It could suggest it, but to me it's like six separate stories over different time periods. And for me, I mean, I'm not going to spoil anything here, but I mean, sort of the interconnectedness is, if you do a good deed or if you help out a person, that good deed will sort of echo through the centuries. But to me, I didn't get that either. So I wish I again, for the spectacle of it and for perhaps the experimental nature that you have six stories going on all at once with similar characters. Okay, it was ambitious, but boy, I could tell you of a million ambitious films that aren't good films. So ambition doesn't create a good film.
Well, the Wachowskis were the ones that invented, and everybody had to, they had to use it after they did The Matrix, where they had that circular photography, and so they could pan around the person as she jumps up in the air to do a karate move, and they could go around her, and that was just done with lots and lots of cameras, is how they did it.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of interesting. But that's all right. Then everybody started using it for other things, you know, and then doing that, and that was kind of cool. I think another iconic part of that movie is the very beginning of The Matrix Reloaded, when she has on the motorcycle and she flies through the skylight and she lands like with one leg out and one arm out, and it's kind of
visually cool. But you know, I mean, again, we go back to 2001. I know people who would watch 2001 today and go, "What on earth did I just see? You know, what's going on here?" But I think, to me, there's a documentary on Stanley Kubrick that's in the CD or the DVD pack that you can get. And Woody Allen is interviewed. Not sure where I'm going with this. Woody Allen says, first time I saw 2001, he didn't like it. He just goes, what in the world was that? He watched it a second time and said, there's something going on here. And then he says the third time he saw it, he said it was one of the greatest movies ever. I'm not sure if this will happen with Cloud Atlas, where you see it two or three times and it comes together better, and I understand it better, because it's pretty straightforward. I'll be curious what your listeners think about it if they go see it.
I haven't even figured out the Star Child yet in 2001. I don't know that I even understand that, so there's no sense in me getting too involved in some of these things.
Oh, come on. I mean, 2001. It's like our next, we got to evolve, you know?
You know what's too bad is another one of these things we talk about. Let's make a sequel. We'll call it 2010. And there was no point in making the sequel 2010. I mean, just stick with 2001, be happy you did that movie, and leave it alone.
Well, Arthur C. Clarke, the author, did actually make three sequels. He wrote 2001, actually, I think it was originally a short story. Then he wrote 2010. Then there's a book called 2061. And then there's a final book called, of course, Arthur C. Clarke is no longer with us, but he did write a book called 3001. So there's a number of at least book sequels to it. But, the film itself, the Stanley Kubrick original, is such a unique and amazing vision. It's one of my all-time favorite films.
Now, another movie that's out, and I saw him being interviewed, and that was Gerard Butler and his Mavericks. Chasing Mavericks. Mm-hmm. In case you wondered what the next movie is going to be for the film festival next year, the next surf movie, I think we found it. But it's very fascinating. It's about Mavericks that's up by the coast up here, below Santa Cruz, and it's these crazy waves that come in twice a year, and they're huge, and where they surf is not like sandy bottom necessarily. It could be really rocky in some places, and these people are crazy and go out and do this. And Gerard Butler was trying to describe, and they had him, be in the waves, part of the time to take pictures, And he got punched down by a wave, and he said it was the most scary thing he's ever had happen to him. Was the weight of that water and this massive wave that was on top of me. So it was just really spooky. Then he was related another story. This was on Kelly Ripa. And he was related another story, and he slipped with the S word by mistake because he got into this thing. He got all excited about what he was doing, talking about. So this seems to be the new thing. People get excited about what they're doing.
We showed a documentary a few years ago called Billabong Odyssey. And it's about these surfers where they have to tow them out to these waves that are like this ten-story building. Yeah. And you see these guys surfing. You see this gigantic wave, and there's this little speck, and that's the surfer. And just watching this stuff is like Billabong Odyssey. I think it's available on DVD, and it's sort of like astonishing what these guys do. I don't know if they're up near Santa Cruz or where the Mavericks are, but you were telling me about, these waves that crash only a certain time of the year. Maybe that's what Mavericks is about. But there's other documentaries on surfers where they are like a speck on a wave that looks like it's 10 stories high.
And we talked about this last week. Those of us that were from New Jersey thought that all waves out in California were that big. That's what the Beach Boys were riding, these big, massive waves, And you came out here and you had this stuff lapping at your toes. And you're going, where's the waves, Didn't matter. You still have surfers out there. It doesn't matter what the conditions are. The surfers are out there on that board. All right. Interesting. It's actually Mavericks is by Half Moon Bay. That's what I was trying to remember. By Half Moon Bay. All right. There's not a lot in Half Moon Bay. Nancy and I stayed up there one time. There's a handful of restaurants and a handful of galleries and stuff. It's cute. I guess that's the best way to call it. It's cute. But if you're a surfer, it's Mecca, so to speak. But there you go. Don't give up on Tai Chi Zero.
Oh, boy.
Now, tell me about Tai Chi Zero.
Wait,
I don't want to do that yet, because that's your movie. I know that.
Start that tomorrow.
Okay. Well, yeah, let's go ahead and just do it. We don't care. We'll mix and match.
Sure.
What's that? So tell me about Tai Chi.
Tai Chi Zero is actually part one of this absolutely crazy kung fu, wire fu. Wire fu is when they're flying around like in Crouching Tiger. And I saw this at Toronto again about a month and a half ago, and it happened to be a day where I saw some pretty crummy movies. So I thought, look at this, full action, crazy, steampunk, kung fu, crazy movie. So I thought, okay, let's give this a shot. It's so fun, and it's so action-packed. I mean, the review today was not so great. And they just say, you know, if you can handle action for about an hour and a half, 2 hours, then this is your movie. And truly, the energy behind this thing, and what they may not mention in the review, I'm not sure if I read the whole thing, this is a really funny movie. I mean, it's got a lot of humor in it, which I think a lot of these kung fu movies need. I mean, sometimes they take themselves so seriously. This is about a kid who loses, you know, tragic childhood, and he wants to learn kung fu, so he goes to this village in the mountains, and everybody in the entire village, you know, from the grandparents to the kids, know kung fu, right? It's this kung fu village. That's pretty funny in and of itself. He wants to go and learn kung fu, and nobody will teach it to him. It's almost as if he's an intruder in this village.
This is like what the Mavericks movie is about.
Oh,
I mean, in essence, it's one of these. It's one of these. What do you call them? You're a role model, a thingy, you know, a mentor,
uh-huh,
kind of a thing. But I remember reading this. But here, let me say this before you go on. Apparently, the people that review for this Ticket magazine, they are, you can tell that their bent is towards the big release movies.
They can be.
That's what I sort of see. I very seldom see them, you know, even with a movie that ends up being just critically acclaimed later on that you run, and I don't think they get it sometimes. I got to tell you the truth, I don't think they get it.
Well, I mean, if you go into Tai Chi Zero thinking of one thing, you're going to see this martial arts, you know, thing where it's kind of heady and, you know, like, I mean, like Crouching Tiger, it was like, you know, there's a spiritual thing going on as you're kicking somebody's head in the head, you know. But this is just fun. And, I mean, for instance, I'll get, here's a scene. The guy is dying to learn kung fu or all these ancient martial arts. So one person says, okay, I'll take you on. So what he does is he goes over to this big piece of tofu. And he cuts a piece of tofu off, he puts it in his hand, and he turns to the kid and says, okay, knock this out of my hand. Can't do it. He cannot knock this piece of tofu out of the guy's hand with all his moves and so on and so forth. It's really funny. Throughout the movie, a lot of the kung fu practitioners will get into a stance, and along the bottom there's a subtitle that this is the, you know, pulling the wool over your eyes, of your opponent's eyes stance. You know, crazy
That's
stuff
fun.
Like that.
That's
I mean,
fun.
I mean, and all through the movie, they get into a position, and then along the bottom, it's, you know, I'm walking through the forest stance, and it's so funny. But the thing is, the energy behind Tai Chi Zero, it's relentless, and I just had the most fun in the world. The ending was also, well, I won't tell you the ending.
All right. Crouching Tiger was another one of those things that sort of came out of the woodwork, and I don't know that they ever expected it to take off the way it did, but it did. And
yes.
yet, it was so, the thing that always amazed me is, I enjoyed it very much, but the thing that amazes me is that I would enjoy it as much as I did when you had all this crazy wire stuff, and your people are running on the tops of trees and doing all
yep.
kinds of weird stuff. You're like, well, wait a minute, that can't happen, you know, it just, that can't happen, but you were still, you were compelled. I think the acting was very good in it, to tell you the truth. And the rest of the story, the storyline was such that it sort of sucked you into it, you know, I think very well. And so the fact that they were doing things that can't be done is like, okay, fine.
Yeah, they get into this in Tai Chi, but there's also this, like I said, an undercurrent of humor that wasn't in Crouching Tiger. And I would say that Tai Chi Zero makes Crouching Tiger look dull. I mean, it's so in-your-face, action-packed, and crazy stuff. I mean, almost every scene has something crazy going on. So I hope people come see it. It's what's interesting is this week or next week, there is another film that's getting some pretty heavy television advertising called The Man with the Iron Fists. It's presented by Quentin Tarantino. Russell Crowe is in it. Looks like we're in the same area, but I'm sure that one will be much more bloody and violent. It has an R rating. Tai Chi Zero is PG-13. You know, there's a ton of action, but there aren't heads flying and blood squirting or anything like that.
Mr. Tarantino's doing it. We know that there's some of that in store for us. Somewhere.
Yes, more than likely.
You know what's really weird? I don't know if it was Pulp Fiction. Was that his first movie? No, he had a movie before Pulp Fiction, but I can't remember what it was.
Reservoir Dogs?
Reservoir Dogs, I think, yeah. Which I actually like better than Pulp Fiction. Pulp Fiction was one of those things that left me going, I'm not sure about this guy. You know, I don't really know about the guy. Then, as gruesome as they were, I absolutely was taken by the Kill Bill movies. I just was. I don't know why. Hmm. And I know I can say by the look on his face, he's going, Beneke, you got no taste at all. I can. Sorry. All your taste is in your tongue, Beneke. Anyway, then they had. No. No, that's okay. Then he did Inglourious Basterds, which, see, he's wincing again. He's wincing again. Inglourious Basterds was kind of as weird as people walking along the tops of trees.
Yeah, I agree with you.
If you're going to have, if you're going to make up a story about how Hitler gets killed by Jews, that was cute, I guess. But I don't know how else to describe it. But I don't know.
Tarantino has a huge following. He has his new one is called Django Unchained, which he patterned after, I believe, some Euro-Western spaghetti westerns. I think it's coming out in December, January, and everyone's all hot on his latest. And, he has a huge following, and people think he's a great filmmaker. I'm not so enthused about him, but that's just me.
Well, how do I say this? I don't know that I think of him as a great filmmaker. I think that what he makes is entertaining in its own disgusting way. Do you know what I mean?
Well, I couldn't make it through the Kill Bill movies, and people told me you got to see these things. But there's, for me personally, there's a difference between violence, and I don't have any problem with violence in a film if it helps the story or if it's part of the whole narrative or whatever it may be. I find Quentin Tarantino kind of goes more the cruelty. Not that violence isn't cruel, but he likes to sort of get into the cruelty of it all.
Yeah, he does,
and
he goes way too far with it.
When
you have what's the name of the woman that was what's her name
Uma Thurman.
Uma Thurman. When you have Uma Thurman, slaughtering 10,000 people with a sword. It's kind of like, okay, well, that's not very likely, but and so it's like it goes on and on and on and on and on with those people getting killed by a sword. So it was a little bit too, it was a little much just to support his premise. That this guy that made the sword made the finest swords in all the land, mm-hmm. and therefore we're going to show you how fine it is. And this woman's going to slaughter 10,000 people in a restaurant. Okay, whatever. Okay, whatever. But I don't know. For some reason, some of the stuff he's done, I like. I don't know what to
do. Oh, yes. He has a great following. And I think his new film, Django Unchained, will probably be very big around the holiday time. He has a following. I don't think he's this, everybody says he's such a great dialogue writer. Of course, everyone cites Pulp Fiction with, the McDonald's Royale with cheese. I just thought, this isn't great dialogue. But I'm sure people are going to shoot me down thinking he's great. But I'm not a huge fan of Quentin Tarantino.
What's interesting about the man is that he, another one of these people that just sort of came out of the woodwork. And started doing these movies. I don't know who backed his first movies. Who backed Reservoir Dogs?
I know that there were some great veterans in Hollywood. Monty Hellman, who was making a lot of films back in the 60s, like the Hell's Angels movies. I think he helped provide some of the financial support for Reservoir Dogs. But one of my criticisms of Tarantino is very derivative. I mean, Reservoir Dogs is kind of a remake of a Hong Kong film. I actually had kind of fun with Grindhouse, where he and Robert Rodriguez sort of fashioned this double feature with fake trailers after some of these exploitation features of the 70s. And I thought that was kind of fun, although it was very grisly and violent. But just sort of the fact that here's a brand new film and it has scratches and dirt on it and, real, doesn't it? I just thought it was kind of a lot of fun. So Grindhouse, I had fun with.
He's different. Let's say that. We'll end with Quentin Tarantino is different.
And he has a new film coming out the holidays.
New film coming out for the holidays. We're going to talk about what else is going on and what else is coming out and what else is out and all things movie, because that's what we do here. We're only in it for the movies, and we'll be back with more.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
Delicious things to eat.
The popcorn can't be beat. The sparkling drinks are just dandy. The chocolate bars and the candy. So let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
Quiet, numbskulls, I'm broadcasting.
Talk about a marriage made in hog heaven. Moe's Smokehouse Barbecue in the Palm Theater.
They're right around the corner from each other. If you're headed to the 415 show at the Palm, have a rack of ribs at Moe's after the show. Going to the Palm's 7 p.m. show, you got to go to Moe's for a pulled pork, chicken, or shredded beef sandwich. On the weekends, Moe's has six different salads you can enjoy before the 1:30 show. And when it's over, you can go back to Moe's, enjoy half a chicken or chicken sandwich, slaw, tater salad, fries, chips, onion rings, and lots of other things. It's Moe's, and Moe knows barbecue. When you're enjoying a popcorn and soda at the Palm, leave room for some Chipotle lime tacos and a pitcher of beer at Moe's. Moe's has food to go, and when was the last time you had some ribs at the Palm? I'm just kidding. Maybe. What makes Moe's so darn good is experience. The happiest city in America's first barbecue restaurant. How do you think we got the title? Moe's and the Palm Theater. Perfectly paired for your enjoyment.
Get away to the beach this fall with the Sea Venture Beachfront Resort's Fall Escape Package. Those of you familiar with Pismo Beach know that the months of September and October bring the best weather the Central Coast has to offer. And along with the great weather, the Sea Venture is offering a low-price Fall Escape Package. For this romantic getaway, you'll be staying overnight in a room with a private balcony hot tub, fireplace, and feather bed. Your package also includes a complimentary bottle of champagne or wine delivered to your room. This package is valid Sunday through Thursday, and it's just $159 per night. You can also add a $50 dinner voucher for the Sea Venture restaurant for just an additional $40. The Sea Venture restaurant sits above the resort with fabulous ocean views and tasty coastal cuisine. Happy hour is nightly, 4 to 6, and you might see whales and dolphins cavorting offshore while you enjoy the sunset. Live music is featured Wednesday night from 6 to 9, and Sundays on the deck from 2 to 5 in the afternoon. So if your summer has come and gone and you still need to get away and relax, call and reserve the Sea Venture Fall Escape Package. The Sea Venture Beachfront Resort, the best on the beach in Pismo Beach.
Ever smell coffee beans roasting?
You probably will when you start buying your bags of coffee at Slow Roasted Coffee's warehouse in Los Osos. Slow Roasted Coffee is expanding their own in-house store, which will feature, you guessed it, coffee and accessories. They're open weekdays from 6 a.m. to 5 p.m., and there's always a few free coffees for you to sample. Catch this. You'll save money with the new Slow Roasted Coffee Coin Club. Here's how it works. After each coffee purchase, they'll stamp your coin, and your 10th pound will be free. Of course, your local grocery stores still carry Slow Roasted Coffee, but now you can shop directly at their warehouse. That's right. Walk in the door, and you might smell the beans a-roastin'. You'll find Slow Roasted Coffee in Los Osos at 1172 Los Olivos Avenue near Fairchild. Now in their third decade, Slow Roasted Coffee is truly a Central Coast tradition. Mmm, that tastes great.
The fundamental things apply as time goes by.
Let's deal with a very fundamental rule that does apply when you're getting older. It's called hearing as time goes by. She can go to the Palm and watch a subtitle flick.
Suppose you run your business and let me run mine.
I am. My business will tell you about Karen Scott Audiology. When it comes to hearing, she's the best for little kids, big kids, young adults, middle-agers, and we old elders.
Is looking at you, kid.
But really, if you can't hear what's going on the screen, and this guy hardly moves his lips, how would you know that he said this?
Of all the gin joints in all the towns in all the world, she walks into mine.
See, Dr. Karen Scott, so your next trip to the Palm will be enjoyable. For your hearing's sake, go see Karen Scott in the Walther Building next to the DMV in San Luis Obispo.
I think this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
It is. Beautiful friendship right there. Bill Benica, Jim D, this is Real to Real, and we're talking about all things movies and different things that are going on in the movies. Now, Jim brought something in here. I'll let you talk about that first, all right? And that's and then we'll review what's going on at the Palm, the other movies. But let's go ahead and let's talk about that. And Jim brought up the point that he said, the blockbustery whammy bammy jammy movies that come out and all the kids flock to it, that's what everybody pays attention to. But if you really look at the bottom line of movies, and it's the older people that are watching the movies.
I found this doubly interesting just because, Bill, you and I are from New Jersey, and this comes from the Bergen Record from northern New Jersey, which was the newspaper which was in my home when I was growing up in New Jersey. But anyway, the article called Hollywood's Dilemma: Older Moviegoers Buy More Tickets. And when I saw that headline, I thought, okay, this is something that I've known about for about the past 5 years. Yeah. And the fact that Hollywood does seem to shoot for that younger audience, if you think of Harry Potter or some of the franchises and that are geared toward a younger audience. Or, you know, we were talking about Taken 2. I think this is actually your 18 to 25-year-old male target audience. But really, when you get down to the ticket buyers, the moviegoers that seem to, you know, hey, it's Friday night, let's go to the movies, or Saturday, let's go to the movies, more of a habit. Older, 40 and up are the demographic, a word I don't really like, the demographic that go to the movies the most often. And I, you know, maybe it's the fare that we have at the Palm, which maybe appeals to an older audience, at least now. I mean, when I go back to the 80s, it seemed to be students, the younger audience, would spearhead an interest in the foreign language films or something that was sort of out of the ordinary or alternative type stuff. It almost goes back to the 1950s and 60s when students were really interested in foreign language films and they were coming over here more, more international cinema was happening in this country, and students seemed to be very interested. That seems to be different these days. I think students and the younger audience are so wrapped into their gadgets, computers, that they probably says, oh, I'm not going to go see that movie. I just watch it on my computer.
Well, the other thing, too, I think, Jim, is that I think they want, you know, this younger generation is this instant gratification type thing, you know, and they don't want to sit through a lot of plot, I don't think. I don't think they have the temperament to sit through a lot of plot. I think that if something's not happening pretty darn quick, and I look at, you know, of course I have kids that are 12, 10 and 12, you know, my niece and nephew are 10 and 12, and I know that's how they are. Matter of fact, Wally was just inducted in the Robot Hall of Fame yesterday. I don't know if you knew that or not, but anyway, Wally was inducted, and they hated Wally. And when I look at, when I think about it, of course they did. It's, you know, it's a thing that had an adult theme to it, you know, this love theme throughout it, and it didn't have a lot of action. It just wasn't one of these action-adventure type movies. And so this is what, so even though I realize they're 12 and 10, I still think, though, even kids older, I think teens and stuff have grown up with the same kind of a diet fed to them as to what they're going to watch. And I think that's part, I think that would be part of it. I that would be my guess.
Again, what's interesting, Bill, is I go, when I go back to the 50s, 60s, and particularly in the 80s when I had the Rainbow open, a younger audience would come to see like a Woody Allen movie, like Manhattan. I mean, to me, a younger audience coming to see Manhattan today just wouldn't happen. Or they're going to go see Harry Potter, Avengers, things like that. But the younger audience would not be interested. I'm stereotyping, but we had that film come in, like I told you, about a string quartet with Christopher Walken, Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Right.
It's called The Late Quartet.
Right.
I think it's a great little movie, and I think if I would have seen this when I was in my 20s, I would still think it's a great movie. But I don't see a younger audience coming to see this. In fact, when we show A Late Quartet in the middle of November, about a month from now, I think it'll be 99% gray hair in the audience. And it's unfortunate, because I think a younger audience would really like this film if they can kind of get away from the short attention span.
How did the younger people take to Midnight in Paris? Did you have a young audience for that at all, or was it all older?
It's all kind of what they talk about in this article, where it's like 40 and up. And that's not saying that a younger audience would come and enjoy the film, but it was generally to an older audience. And when we say older, you know,
40 and above,
35, 40 and up. Yeah. So, of course, they may not know who all the characters that were being introduced in that film, like who were sort of like Salvador Dali and things like that. And again, I don't want to act like a younger audience is not informed or they know about history or things like that. It just seems to be a general situation right now where that regular movie-going routine is not held by a younger audience. They're going to go to there's that new Twilight film that will come out in about a month. They will flock to it. It'll make $400-500 million, no sweat. But will that person that went to see the Twilight film the next week go see another film? No, they're probably going to wait for the next
Big movie.
Yeah, big movie. And so and also to be somewhat adventurous to get away from the very big blockbuster stuff. It just doesn't seem to be happening these days. And again, I want to temper my comments by saying I don't want to stereotype the younger generation. I know there's a number of them out there that would probably be very interested in some of the foreign international films or stuff that isn't the blockbuster superhero stuff. But in general, I can tell you at the Palm, I look at the audience, you know, from the booth, and it's 99% gray hair.
Well, and the other thing, too, is you have, and you're right, and, you know, this whole new era that we're in with young people, and they're in tune with their iPads and their iPods and their thingies and texting each other and all that. I mean, it's a, for those of us that are older, we're taken aback a little bit by it. You know, we're sort of almost stunned by the fact that they do this to such a degree. And I was reading a Miss Manners thing the other day, and she was talking about when is it totally inappropriate to send an email or a text. Well, the obvious things were like, you know, if you're sending sympathy for the death of someone, you know, you should write it out in a card and that kind of thing. And, but boy, I'll tell you, I don't know how much she's revised her idea of what good manners is today, but the young people are revising what the idea of good manners is today. Mm-hmm. And guess what? They're going to be the ones that are, you know, running things, and that's how they're going to be. And so it's a kind of like an old archaic thing. I remember Miss Etiquette locally here.
Oh, yeah.
Annette Flowers. I remember that she said, I remember her saying on Dave's show once that if you should acknowledge, it was a wedding, that you within 3 days of your wedding, you should have had thank you notes out. Mm-hmm. And I thought, nobody in the world's going to do that in 3 days, you know, if they do it at all. I mean, people, you know, how many times now do you give somebody, especially a younger person, you give something to somebody, you never hear about it, they never say thank you, they never do anything. It's just, there it is. So I've come to not expect it. I really have. I've just come to not expect it. If someone says thank you, one of the kids says, that's nice, they do it. Mm-hmm. But I don't really anticipate that they will. And I know that's weird, but that's what I'm seeing in younger people.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't want to stereotype, but manners seem to be kind of dicey, and especially when you are constantly on your computer or your handheld gadget where you can send messages. Obviously, you tend to say things to another person differently if you were face-to-face, but if you text them, boy, you can get away with murder. You can be kind of mean and nasty and send that message. And, you know, there's a kind of a lack of manners or courteousness when you're doing your texting and messaging. Not to say that you can't write the most wonderful thank you note.
Yes, you can, but here's the other thing. And this is the problem with it, and this is why we see what I call electronic abuse.
Yeah.
Is this idea that I can actually send something to somebody that I don't know at all, and I can be anonymous in having done it.
Yes.
You know, I can sign it as something else or whatever. I mean, I'm just saying that it's really weird. I mean, it's really kind of weird, and I think people, it has changed their manners. I think it changes how people relate to each other. I think it really does. I mean, why would it not?
Yeah, well, that anonymity gives you license to get nasty,
yeah,
you know. And
yeah.
It's so funny, there's a guy who writes on the Internet, and he says, well, what would you like to see on my blog? And one of those responses is, well, I'd like you to have, you know, readers put comments underneath your commentary. And the response was, I'm not going to let people do that because the reason is, have you ever seen the commentary after any article where people tend to get nasty and then they start fighting? And
I don't understand. I mean, of course, we do calcosnews.com here. Mm-hmm. And Calcos News, the people are able to write in and make a comment about the news story. And mm-hmm. You're right. If it's a big story, it starts off with people having opinions about what the story's about. Then it's pretty much people having opinions about each other.
Oh, yeah.
And it just, the fur flies and the mud slings, and it's kind of like, what is the point of this? I mean, you know, why would you get into this with people? I mean, I don't get it. I don't get it.
Well, being anonymous gives you a license to do things you probably wouldn't do in person.
I guess.
It's unfortunate.
I guess. Now, do you have, I think I have page two of this. Do you have page one underneath that other thing you have?
Yes, right here.
Oh, okay.
Those are the top movies of the week.
Top movies of the week. Let's talk about what they were. And again, once again, this we go back to the, it doesn't matter what the critics say, it doesn't matter what Jim and Bill says, it doesn't matter, you know, this is the people go to movies they go to.
Yep.
Paranormal Activity 4, once again, was the weekend gross was the highest.
Now look at how much it cost to make that movie.
$5 million.
And it made how much the opening weekend?
It made $29 million.
Yeah, and it's probably up to about 50 now. Yeah, so, right. I mean, that's kind of a cash cow. They figured out these films where they can make them for dirt cheap, and the opening weekend they've made their money four times over.
This was the what was the first movie that they did like this? The Blair Witch Project, wasn't that the first one?
Yes,
that was sort of this. You know, everybody's carrying a little camera around, and taking pictures of each other, and goofing around.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, when I first heard about that, I thought, well, that's just the most ridiculous. Nobody's going to like that.
Well, that was
look at what it's evolved into. That's liked very well.
Yeah, that's a genre unto itself. It's called found footage, and there's a ton of movies that are supposedly, oh, we found this footage, and here's the movie, and it's kind of an interesting premise. There's a few of them that are really kind of interesting, but it is sort of this genre where, oh, we found these video cameras, and here's what we found.
You know what's interesting also is, as I was looking at trailers today, I saw the one trailer and thought, okay, I'll look at some of these others. The amount of work, it would seem to me to be a lot of work, that people will go through to pretend that a trailer is out and make this ridiculous trailer, and they, like Avatar 2, like a trailer for Avatar, I'm thinking, do they have a trailer for that? So then you click on it, and it's these people, you know, dressed up in funny costumes and running around and all this stuff. It's cute. I mean, it's cute, but it's there seems like a lot of effort goes into it. I'm like, okay, whatever.
You know? Well, you go online, you realize there are a lot of people with a lot of time on their hands, at least a lot more than I have.
That's true. All right, Argo was number two. That did $16 million, and that one cost, so total, right now they're showing a total gross of $43 million for a $44.5 million movie, so that's got to jump a little bit here. But this is just domestic, right?
That's just domestic, but I think Argo will be hanging out in the top 10 for a few weeks. It's getting great reviews. The studio is really getting behind it with television advertising, and, you know, and it's based on a true story.
Well, and I saw where, and this is also helps propel these things, I saw them interviewing somebody on one of the TV shows that was involved in this in real time, you know, when it actually happened. So as soon as you do that, and you know, and it's based on a factual thing, then you just, you propel it further along, I think, you know, by people going, whoa, that was really something. Now I got to see the movie and see what else happened, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah, of course, I think Ben Affleck took some liberties, of course, make it a very exciting movie. But on the other hand, you do have the people who actually lived it. It's kind of fascinating, and I got to get out to see it because everybody who said has seen it really thought it was a great little film.
All right, Taken 2, my favorite that I haven't seen. It's now up to $105 million, and it costs $45 million to make.
Yeah. Wow. Well, they probably just broke even there. So, but that's still in the top 10, and Liam Neeson, like we've said, is on a roll, and people like to see, I think, revenge. So there you go.
People have always liked to see revenge. From back in the old Western days, you know, that's what it was about, was revenge. You know, somebody done me wrong.
Yeah.
I'm going to go after him. I mean, we were talking about The Blob and Steve McQueen being The Blob. Then he was in a Western after that that had to do with his parents or somebody being killed, remember? Mm. And he went and tracked them down.
Wow, I don't remember this.
I do. But I can't remember the name of it, of course. Why would I? I can't remember the name of anything else. But anyway, so that was interesting. But anyway, he was in a movie where he tracked somebody down. But, I mean, they've been out forever, the track them down movies. And
yeah,
like
yeah.
I said to you, I watch these old, every now and then I turn on Channel 13, is these old Bonanzas and the old Rawhides and all that. God, were they boring. They were just hideous.
Yeah. Well, I mean, going back to revenge, it's more like revenge / justice.
Yeah,
you know,
that's
it's
right.
Like, okay,
right.
We're meeting out justice by right. killing this person. Anyway, we like to see justice, although it's probably mainly revenge.
So you know what would be interesting with Gerard Butler is to know how people felt about the ending of Ordinary Citizen. Is that what it's called? Ordinary Citizen?
Oh, yeah, I know that one.
You know, where his family was raped and murdered, and then he went after the people that did it. And he sawed one up, and it was and then when they were executing the other one, he had some stuff brought in that was chemicals, and it made him, you know, crazy, nasty, terrible, dying. But then he started going after the good guys. Mm-hmm. But he felt like it was just because they had so failed him and let these guys done a plea bargain. Anyway, I think it's one good citizen, just a citizen, good citizen.
Yeah.
I forget. So anyway,
yeah.
Anyway, but I wonder how people felt about the end of that movie and him dying at the end of the movie. You know, him. Do they would people go, well, that's what should have happened. That was just because he had gone too far, or were people disappointed and say, you know, that's too bad he got screwed up because he wasn't done doing other people or something. I don't know.
Well, I mean, the film that comes to mind when we talk about this stuff is No Country for Old Men, which I thought was a great film. And I think people were, you know, Bob, my good friend, he saw No Country for Old Men. I might have told you this. The end of the film, half the audience booed. They didn't like the ending because it just sort of ends.
Yeah,
you know?
Yes, it is a weird ending.
And when you have somebody like Javier Bardem in this film, who is this cold-blooded killer, and, you know, he gets in that car wreck near the end, and you expected to see him taken down brutally just because he's this homicidal crazy guy.
Crazy.
And it doesn't happen.
No.
And I think people were really upset about that, saying, wait a minute, this guy deserved to be, you know, killed in the most merciless way possible, and it doesn't happen. So,
he's walking off, help.
Yeah, he walked off, he didn't die some gruesome death, which you expected, which is,
Well, the other thing, in the ending where the guy, he walks off, that's the end of the movie, is like,
And then Tommy Lee Jones is talking about something about his dad in the movie.
Yeah, going, okay.
I thought it was great, but that's just...
I enjoyed the movie, too, myself. Let's talk about what else is at the Palm.
Okay, we're holding, speaking of which, we're holding over Seven Psychopaths, which is kind of a violent movie. It's pretty violent, but it has an incredible cast. Christopher Walken, Woody Harrelson, Sam Rockwell is in this, Tom Waits. And it's about these guys who like to kidnap dogs from big people, and then they collect the ransom money and they return the dog. But they steal Woody Harrelson's cute little dog, and they run into a lot of trouble. But it's, again, violent but very funny. There's sort of an undercurrent of humor with Seven Psychopaths. So we have that for one more week. The other film is called Liberal Arts. It's about a teacher sort of falling in love with a very wonderful, intelligent, provocative student. And we got a review of that in this week's New Times on the split screen. So if you want more information on Liberal Arts, it's a good little film. Read the New Times article, of Split Screen. We got pretty good thumbs up on
and
that review.
And it's a kind of a romance thing, right?
Yeah, but the teacher has some scruples. He's a little concerned about falling for this younger student and everything. But, you know, it's not one of the ones where it descends into bathroom humor and something like that. It's a little more intelligent. It takes this idea of, you know, falling in love with one of your students a little more seriously as opposed to being rather salacious. It's a good little film. Liberal Arts.
I was big on that salacious stuff.
But don't forget Tai Chi Zero. Give that a shot.
Tai Chi Zero.
It's
out.
A lot of fun.
Cloud Atlas. We'll just have to wait and see what happens with that thing. I was baffled by the trailer, and I don't know.
Why don't you go see it? Don't take my review and forget about it.
No.
Go in and see it clean.
You're making me laugh sometimes. Somebody else suggested. They said, "Why don't we go to see something?" And I said, "I go to the movies once in a blue moon. I wouldn't go see that." You know, I don't go to the movies that much. I wouldn't go see that. I go to the Palm mostly, but, you know, I'm saying is that I miss Batman, the third Batman movie. I'm upset about that. I should have seen that, I thought.
Well, there's a lot of stuff out there. There's the redemption of the fact you can see it on video, hopefully. But you know, to your listeners, and they probably already know this, we get into November, December, and there should be a number of films coming out that will warrant Oscar nominations. Usually they save those for the end of the year. We've got some great things coming to the Palm, and I also think there'll be some good stuff at the multiplexes in the coming season.
Stuff's happening. We thank Jim D. for being here on this Thursday, and we'll get together again next Thursday for another edition of Reel to Reel. And
we're only in it for the movies.
Hey, that's it for today. Tomorrow at noon, right after noon, we have Karen Velian here. We'll do our CalcoastNews.com Week in Review. And you have yourself a great evening. We'll get together then. And don't forget, tonight is the Munchkin March down at the Farmer's Market. The little guys, there'll be like 500 little guys all March. And don't forget to bring a thing of food for the food bank and, a can of food or something like that. Until tomorrow, may all your trails be happy ones, and don't believe everything you hear here, because
this is Tarka's Jeep. The game is over. The Friends and Neighbors Network.
Game over.
With Bill Benica.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling.